All right, everybody, welcome back to episode number 9 of Talking Taker, our encyclopedic exploration into the career of the greatest WWF creation of all time. Thanks for joining us along for this for the ride. Not the last ride, not quite yet, but just part of the ride. I am joined, as always, for another round of Dead Man Talking with my tag team partner, Travis White. Are you ready to do this, buddy?
I think I'm ready as I'm ever going
to
be.
Are you ready to say goodbye to Giant Gonzalez?
Well, we ended the last podcast with a quote from the commentary saying the war is far from over, and my note was dang it. So, but here we are. Again, we're not giving up because the matches are what they are. We're just doing this thing, so let's keep this thing rolling and roll right on through SummerSlam 93.
Rolling right on through SummerSlam 93. We left off with WrestleMania 9 with Undertaker winning by disqualification over Giant Gonzalez, and the feud must continue with Gonzalez and Undertaker and Harvey Whippleman all in the mix. We have one pay-per-view in the middle, King of the Ring 93, with no Undertaker involvement there, but Undertaker spent the summer continuing the feud with Giant Gonzalez, but his main feud over the summer was with a guy named Mr. Hughes. You have any memories of Mr. Hughes?
I do. I remember when Curtis Hughes was in WCW for a little minute, and then do you remember when Chris Jericho debuted and he had Curtis Hughes as his heater?
Yes.
In WWF?
He lost a lot of weight. He was real skinny.
He had lost ton of weight, but he wore sunglasses all the time.
Curtis Hughes. That's his gimmick, yeah.
Yeah, that's his thing, man. Curtis Hughes. So, I guess he was with Whippleman's little Dungeon of Doom or whatever, if you will.
Yeah, he was managed by Whippleman. Yeah. I watched a lot of 1993 Raw the past few months. I started going through it the first year of Monday Night Raw, trying to watch all those. And Curtis Hughes, Mr. Hughes, is on there a lot. I keep saying this about a lot of people back then. He's not a good wrestler or anything, but there's something about him. He's like a poor man's Big Boss Man in a lot of ways, just like beating people up. But his outfit just kills me every time. I've never understood him and IRS, both wrestling in tie, business suit, suspenders, dress shoes, dress slacks, but Mr. Hughes took it to another level by wrestling with his sunglasses on. And, I mean, what is the logic? And how does that help him to have his sunglasses on while he's wrestling?
You can't, man. It's ridiculous. But he's stuck with it, you know?
It gave Bobby Heenan a chance a lot of times to say, you can't hit a man with glasses?
Exactly. Yeah.
But I bring it up because it's actually, it's weird. They feud through all summer of 93, and Giant Gonzalez, I mean, that feud is not on Raw at all, hardly. Undertaker's mainly feuding with Mr. Hughes, and Mr. Hughes does something pretty historic in this feud. I don't know if you know.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he becomes the first person to ever steal the Undertaker's urn and has possession of it. He carries around with him in his matches. And Harvey Whippleman has it with him, and that is a trope that we see throughout the rest of the 90s and a few different feuds, but Mr. Hughes is the first one to take it away.
Yeah, who would have thought that, you know? That's another trivia question that's like, you know, you wouldn't get off the top of your head, you know? Who's the first person to steal Undertaker's urn? Mr. Hughes. You know, but, yeah, because again, the main feud here is actually Harvey Whippleman, right? I mean, Whippleman has his little lackeys, and they're feuding with Undertaker, and so he's just the next pawn in the chess match here. And
but it's weird that we don't get that blow off match. We get the Giant Gonzalez match, but there's not really a Undertaker Mr. Hughes. He's just kind of dropped, and maybe they're just using him because Gonzalez is basically immobile, can't really travel around to the shows or anything. I don't know.
Get him in a rental car or fly him on the jets.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll use Curtis Hughes instead. So. Which somehow is an upgrade, but it is.
Right.
But yeah, Whippleman and Giant Gonzalez and Curtis Hughes has stolen the urn. Yeah, it's really neat that that's an instant heat getter there, man. And the crowd's going to boo him, and just, you know, it doesn't matter if his personality is good or bad, or he's bad in the ring or good in the ring. if you have the Undertaker's urn, that's instant heat right there. So
yep.
That's pretty clever, you know. That's pretty clever. And this match, we're at SummerSlam 93, and this is August 30th, 1993, in Auburn Hills, Michigan. So this match is another one of Undertaker's, I guess we could call it signature matches. I don't know if he ever had any more of these.
I don't think
but,
he did.
This is a rest in peace match.
Oh, the famous rest in peace match, you know. There's a reason why we haven't seen any more of these. But
yep.
They built this up on TV for weeks. Because I remember as a kid watching it, they kept saying, The Undertaker's taking on Giant Gonzalez in a rest in peace match. And they would do the update with Mean Gene, and he would, and they would keep saying,
And The Undertaker meets the 8-foot-tall Giant Gonzalez in a rest in peace match. The Undertaker, the only one who knows the rules, and he has said absolutely nothing.
So in your head, you're thinking, oh my God, what is this match going to be? I have no idea. And
yeah.
You know, back then, you didn't go online and read the match results afterward. You'd have to wait till... You would find out who won on TV, but you'd have to wait till the home video came out to really find out what happened on the pay-per-view. So,
yep.
I just... You know, the match happened, and I didn't know what a Rest in Peace match was till I got the videotape for it. And my mom...
Which was probably... This was August. You probably didn't get the videotape till, like, December. I mean, back then they used to take several months to come out.
Probably, at least October, November. I owned this cassette tape. My mom, I got like good grades on a test or a report card or something, and my mom let me pick out something to get, and she bought me the actual SummerSlam 93 cassette, like when it came out from the video store. Yeah. So I actually owned this one, watched this one a lot, but I remember being excited for the Rest in Peace match, and then Mean Gene comes out, or not Mean Gene, the Fink comes out and says,
Ladies and gentlemen, the following contest, scheduled for one fall, is the Rest in Peace match.
Now that's what's going to be interesting.
Rules are simple. There will be no disqualification.
Oh no.
There will be no countdown.
Oh no.
But there will be a decisive winner.
It's like,
yeah, that's it.
That's it? That's all it is? Just a no disqualification match?
Not even false count anywhere.
No.
Just no DQ and no count out. That's it. Must be a decisive winner.
A decisive winner, excuse me.
Yes, that was the key word, decisive winner. So, I guess, I mean, you had the DQ at WrestleMania, so... No DQ, no count out, but again, not even false count anywhere, anything, tables, casket, nothing. It's just...
Just what everybody wanted.
Yeah, and you'd think with no DQ, no count out or something, the match might take a little longer, but it's only 8 minutes, 4 seconds, so... Well, brutal 8 minutes, four seconds. I didn't want it to be much long.
Oh, man.
You'd think, yeah.
It feels twice as long as the WrestleMania match.
It does. It really does. So, and that may be because the WrestleMania match ended and there was all the stuff afterward, you know, with the clotheslines and the, you know, the gong and all that. But I don't know. This match did. It dragged on.
Yes.
So
it really felt like I could even tell just watching him come down the aisle that Giant Gonzalez really didn't even care at this point. Like, he's.
I wrote that. I wrote when, you know, as the match. Or as the, you know, we get on with the card, that Giant Gonzalez comes out, and my next note I wrote was, no one seems to care, honestly.
No.
Like, the crowd doesn't even care. He doesn't seem like he's into it. I don't know how much longer he lasted after this, but...
I think this might have been his last match.
I wrote, no one seems to care, honestly, because it just looks like the crowd just doesn't care, you know? And that may be because he feuded with Mr. Hughes the whole summer.
Right.
And so they're just bringing this giant, you know, turd back in for the Undertaker to wrestle. So it's like, you know... But Hard Whipman does have the urn, source of power
he
with
does
him.
Does have the urn?
Out, so.
He's not doing his intros like he did for Kamala.
No,
unfortunately.
No racist, non-PC, you know, things. And I don't remember. I think Gonzalez still has the airbrush fur. I didn't make a note of it. He must, you know,
just the airbrush.
So yeah, they got rid of the marketing or the clothing department. It's much been too much money for them to use the actual fur. So anyway,
well,
but I did note here. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, Undertaker's entrance, when the gong, the first gong hits, and then the lights go out.
Yes.
Which It's the first time on pay-per-view it's taking place again. I don't know between WrestleMania and now if it's taking place on Raw or not, or any of the other shows, but this is the first time on pay-per-view we've seen this. The lights go out, and Vince and this place is going bananas! It's just, yeah, awesome.
And Bobby Heenan, as soon as it happens, he goes, see ya! He's running away.
That's so great. Good.
Dude, I got excited when the lights went out. I was like, yes, finally. Too. I've been waiting for it.
I know. Because we didn't know when it started, you know, when we first started doing this. So It's really neat. Again, that's part of the fun of this whole thing, is just getting to see all the iconic things we know as The Undertaker now, 27 years later. Really cool getting to see them, all the little puzzle pieces getting put into place.
Exactly.
You know, if they, you know, make him who he is. So.
And they, I thought it was neat that they had the big video screen above the entrance there, And then his logo comes on the screen as he's coming out.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me, you know, for a long time, they've had the Titantron videos and everything, but nowadays, it's more like that, where it's just like a big giant logo on the screen. They don't really play a video anymore, so I thought kind of everything old becomes new again. In a way.
That's true.
That was interesting.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And he does not have Paul Bearer coming out with him either.
Right.
Which I don't remember what that was about. I can't remember why he wasn't there. Besides, I guess he doesn't have the urn, so maybe Paul Bearer just doesn't go with him.
Well, and I wrote down that, you know, Vince does say, he says that there's no Paul Bearer, and I wrote in quotes, for some time. He says that. He says, for some time.
Yeah.
There's no Paul Bearer. So I don't remember if he got locked away or thrown down the staircase or buried in cement, you know, before the Dudley Boys did it to him.
Right.
Or what happened, but something happened that we missed, and Paul Bearer has been gone for some time, but Undertaker comes out and by himself, and he does raise his hands and the lights come up, man.
Mm-hmm.
So
very
this
cool.
Is the first time we've seen the lights go out and the lights come up. So again, I just watching it, I was just like a little kid again watching it.
Oh,
man, it's so cool, because that's always one of the best parts, no matter how old you are. And then once you learn that he's not really controlling the lights, it's okay. Like, but when you're 7 years old, you see it, you think he is. It's just amazing. So.
I mean, as far as we know, he might be. Did you notice Vince called him the Man in Black? And then Bobby Heenan said, I bet Johnny Cash has a picture of him on his wall.
Yeah. Again, Heenan, just so good.
I enjoyed that.
It was great. I did notice that.
So Undertaker goes right after Gonzalez, just more choking, lots more choking going on.
Which is cool, telling the story, because again, the first time they met, he kind of just kind of stood toe-to-toe, and you know, he wasn't intimidated, but he kind of waited for a minute, but now, you know, Gonzalez has taken his urn, his manager's gone, wherever he is, you know, so Taker's ticked off, you know, so it's cool from a ring psychology standpoint for him. He should attack him, you know, he's ticked off, you know, so that's really neat. You know, they don't look, those little nuances get lost sometimes in some guys. So it's really cool to see that in this match.
To me, I felt like this was like watching someone have a match with a mannequin. Or I know back in the day, you'd have your wrestling buddy stuffed animal, or you had like a life-size one there for a while.
I my aunt. He was a 6-foot-tall wrestling dummy. My aunt stitched from scratch. It was awesome.
We had a lot of fun times
with that NWO shirt on.
Yes, that thing was amazing. But
it was.
That's what I thought. Undertaker was just wrestling, just a big giant, immobile object, and he was just basically wrestling around it and doing things to it. And Giant Gonzalez. He finally bumps towards the end, and we'll get to that, but he doesn't take a bump the whole match, and Undertaker's just doing things off of him and bouncing off of him, and I felt like this is the proverbial wrestling with a broomstick sort of match.
Yeah, it really is. And he's so theatrical, not in a good way, but like when Undertaker would hit him, he wiggles his arms back and forth like he's going to fall over, but he won't fall over.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, but it's almost... It's not good. It's like comedic. So again, I think there's a reason he was short-lived in the WWF, but it served its purpose as a piece of this chapter of Undertaker's career. I wrote a note here though, like he throws Undertaker into the stairs, and it is like a Mick Foley style chair, or not stairs, into the stairs.
Yeah,
it's like a Mick Foley like bumpy takes. I mean, he jams his knee into it and flips over it, and I was like, man,
he goes for
all the non-selling and terribleness that Gonzalez has. Undertaker is putting everything into this match, so
and
he goes hard on that match.
He does, and along with the stairs, which. It's not really a no DQ, so I think people go into the chairs all.
Right.
People go into the stairs all the time, but Giant Gonzalez pulls out a chair, hits two chair shots, and that is the extent of the no disqualification aspect of the rest of this match.
Yeah,
I guess
no chloroform.
No, they're out of the ring for a while, so I guess there's no count out. But
yeah,
I mean that was it. Nothing really deadly. Nothing exciting. Two chair shots.
Was it? I know. I noted that too. It's just strange. Again, that probably comes from his, you know, his greenness in the business. He doesn't know what to do.
Right.
So, but Taker keeps reaching for the urn, and Wolfman keeps like, you know, yo-yoing it in front of him, kind of pulling it away from him, and you know, just you know, almost like Wile E. Coyote type thing, just putting it where there and yanking it back from him and. Stuff, which is good selling by Undertaker too, but he's trying to get that power, you know. At this point, mm-hmm. he's still got the kayfabe's still around with him, you know, and he's still got that mystical power that he gets from the urn. That's why it's such a huge deal that they stole it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
And he can't get it back, so he needs some help.
No.
So all of a sudden, the gong hits, crowd pops huge again every time, and Paul Bearer arrives on the scene
with. A black wreath. Yes. And the commentary says they cannot believe that he is alive. Like, I don't know if he was pronounced dead or anything, but they cannot believe that he's alive, you know.
No.
So
Bobby Heenan's going crazy. Paul Bearer is going crazy, just making ridiculous faces. You know, that gong hitting, they've used that a few times, just like with random. They use it at WrestleMania and I think another time. Just with the one gong. It wasn't the full music, just the one gong. Kind of reminds me of Bray Wyatt's little, I don't even know what you call it, his little sound effect that goes off when he just pops in and pops out, just that little noise to signal and get the crowd to pop huge. So, I don't know. That was an interesting connection.
Yeah, it is.
But,
it is.
Paul Bearer gets his big spot in.
It's clotheslines Harvey Whippleman, man. And then he grabs the urn, and, dude, this crowd,
you thought
$1 million dropped from the sky. They just go absolutely nuts, man. They love it. And he holds it up high. You know how theatrical he is.
Yes.
Now, he's theatrical in a good way.
Yes.
He's selling to the last person in the last row. He holds it up high. And at some point, Undertaker was knocked over or something during all this because he sits up from the ground, and the crowd just loves it. And hits a bunch of throat chops, clotheslines, and then he goes up top for a top rope diving clothesline.
Mm-hmm. He hits five clotheslines, and then, finally gets Gonzalez to go down to one knee, gets the top rope clothesline for the win, and I just put, sure, why not?
Yep.
That's what I wrote.
Holds his arm,
I mean,
pins him in a classic pose, which is cool, but yeah, why not? I mean, that's a quote. It didn't even take a tombstone. He probably didn't want to try to break his back, pick him up or anything. And, you know, why not end this feud this way? No DQ, no count out. Meanwhile, all he did was two chair shots. Yeah, whatever. So, but he does the classic pose. So we've seen the gong, the lights out, him raise the lights with his hands, you know, and the classic pose. The
Shakespeare pose, as Pritchard calls it.
The Shakespeare pose. So he's building, you know, all the pieces into who the Undertaker has become. So that's really cool, though. And I'm trying to find something cool to talk about with this terrible match.
But, I mean, it goes to show, like you said, the crowd went crazy when Paul Bearer got the urn back. And they go crazy when Paul Bearer comes out. And, it, you know, they're into this character so much that he could have been fighting a broomstick. He could have been fighting a mannequin. And it wouldn't have mattered. They were into it so much. And wrestling is not always about 5-star technical matches.
Nope.
It's, you know, sometimes it's at its best when it's storytelling and when there's just a character that you're invested in that makes you care about them. It's sports entertainment, you know, after all.
Right.
And that's, I don't think that's as negative of a term as a lot of people in wrestling make it out to be. Now,
right.
Don't get me wrong. This match is god-awful. It is minus 5 stars. No one should ever, ever watch this match for any reason unless you're doing a podcast going through every Undertaker match. But he's still a mega superstar, and they continue to push him big and give him all these big wins and make a big deal.
I want to say that here is that, you know, he puts the wreath on Gonzalez. He poses with Paul Bearer. They're back together. Paul Bearer's there with him. The urn's there. He does the eye roll. And commentary just, you know, all of them are going, you know, putting over how huge, how unstoppable the Undertaker will be now that they're reunited. They say, you know, now that he and Paul Bearer reunited, he's going to be unstoppable. And that's really cool. Like you said, it's just building this character up. You know, I think Vince McMahon knows he has big plans for this guy. You know, he can see
definitely.
It, you
know, yeah.
The crowd's in. A little interesting note, after this match, Giant Gonzalez turns face.
He does.
He chokeslams Harvey Whippleman.
That's his brief little face turn. He gets right up after the end of the match and is just arguing with Whippleman. Which, we talked about Gonzalez making Undertaker look small. I mean, Harvey Whippleman is half of his size. It's crazy.
He's like a baby standing in there.
Hits him with the chokeslam. They're trying to get something out of this guy, trying to replicate the Andre the Giant Bobby Heenan moment where he finally turns on Heenan. And it's just, you know, no one cares. He lays the wreath on him. What are you going to do? You can't do anything with this guy. You know, it's not his fault. You know, he just doesn't have the body, doesn't have the skill to do it. They tried to do something with him. They gave him a shot. I mean, he definitely impressive looking, the height.
Oh, you
got to give him that. So they went with it, and it just did not work out. But it's working out with Undertaker, like you said, and they're getting him ready for the main event for next month and Royal Rumble as well, going for the championship at Royal Rumble here in a couple months as well.
Yeah, because after this, there's no pay-per-view. The Survivor Series is the next one, right? And he's on a team, I believe, there.
Yeah,
and
this is but he's in the main event.
His next step in his feud and with Whippleman, I guess. Because Yokozuna's with Whippleman at that point, too.
No. He's Mr. Fuji.
Mr. Fuji.
And then Jim Cornette.
Royal Rumble, some of Whippleman's guys come out, I think.
We'll
get to that when we get there. So I feel like it all kind of plays together. But he's with Mr. He's going to begin his feud with Yokozuna starting at the next podcast we talk about, and that match is going to lead to a great match with one of the best special referees of all time.
You know, we've gotten through the valley, man. We're climbing back to the mountaintop. We got some good ones coming up.
We do. So interesting Survivor Series match coming up. Really interesting.
Well,
I think it's more of a match that plays into building the next feud. But this chapter is closed. You know, he's beaten the Kamala and the Ugandan Giant. He's beaten Giant Gonzalez. So, they both got Giant in their name, I guess. So he's taking down the Giant here of Harvey Whippleman. And this chapter is closed, and he's on to the next chapter.
And we'll be on to that next chapter on our next episode next Friday. But until then, we'd love to hear your feedback about SummerSlam 93. What did you think the Rest in Peace match was going to be back when you were a kid and or younger, however younger you were?
Or older.
Do you think we should have another Rest in Peace match someday soon? Should we bring that back? Should we name a pay-per-view after the Rest in Peace match and have a bunch of those matches? You could do a whole pay-per-view of just Undertaker gimmick matches.
That's true. You could.
That should be
8 or 9 matches.
Yes, that should be Halloween Havoc. Just bring back Buried Alive, casket match, coffin match,
and coffin match.
Yes,
exactly.
Hell in a Cell.
They're different.
There's some other ones too, but Boiler Room Brawl.
Oh yes, Inferno. Well, that's kind of Kane.
Inferno. Using that. The body bag.
Mm-hmm,
do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let us know your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter at TalkingTaker, at Alex Dorio as well, on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, all that good stuff. Leave us a comment, leave us a review, subscribe, let us know all that good stuff. We are open to all sorts of sponsorships as well. We will be corporate shills.
Absolutely.
I forgot to mention our sponsor for this episode, IcoPro, brought to you today. You got to want it, people. You got to want it.
Yeah, that's right. Warfare's still around.
Oh.
I doubt it.
I doubt it. Highly doubt it.
If you were there, if you were at ThrowZone 93, please let us know.
Please.
In the meantime, take it easy.
And rest in peace.
And now, see ya!